Diff, forgive me, he said, exhausted. I didn't intend that as an insult. Truly. It's just that some things, and furthermore, are about more than being smart. In fact, he said, most of it is about lying, tricking, and the luck of just barely surviving. He looked up, looked her in the eye. Alice, this land is not generous. It does not forgive, and it would kill to devour you. There is only one reason I have not yet met your father's fate, and it's that I have the ability to convince others to believe what I want them to believe. So please, he said, please trust me enough to do the one thing I'm any good at. If we don't stick together, we're lost for good. Alice hung her head. But even you couldn't save Father, she said, staring into the darkness. Even persuasion wasn't enough. No, Oliver sighed. Not the first time, at least. But we'll get it right this time, I swear it. Alice closed her eyes and hugged herself, more terrified for Father than ever before. Furthermore, it was brilliant and frightening, and though she'd only seen a small slice of it, she could now understand perfectly well why Father had been so enchanted. But it was becoming clear to her that Furthermore was full of quiet dangers, and it would not be wise to be too easily distracted. It would be simple to get lost here, lost and destroyed, and she had not realized that Oliver had been looking after her all this time, quietly convincing this world to leave her unharmed. The truth was, she hadn't trusted Oliver, not really. He'd hurt her somewhere deep, wounded her pride and her vanity, and it made her cold and hard and stubborn. But she could see now that she was being difficult, and fighting Oliver would do them no good. Father needed her, and that meant she had to trust Oliver, no matter how nothing he thought she looked. Oliver lifted her chin with one finger, and when their eyes met, they both apologized. Regrets and reconciliations all at once. Oliver almost smiled. Alice almost did, too. Then she slipped her hand in his and held on tight. Here we go. They walked for days, weeks, months, and years. Don't be so dramatic, Oliver said. It's only been 15 minutes. But I'm cold, Alice sneezed. Oliver stopped to stare at her. Yes, I dare say you are. He looked a bit defeated as he looked her over. They were friends again and making their way out of slumber, feet pounding the cobblestone path. All right, he said, pulling her close. Don't worry, we're almost there. But almost there was still too far, and the farther they walked, the farther the town stayed behind, keeping its lights with it. They'd wound their way through the center of slumber, Alice's eyes eating up what her stomach could not, the fire-like glow, the slinky black backdrop, the hustle and bustle and the sounds that came with it. It was chilly, but it was alive, chimney puffing and storytelling and snips of conversations the strangest strangers left on sidewalks. They were leaving it all behind. So where do we go? She asked Oliver. To get the pocketbook. Up, he said cheerfully. My goodness, Oliver, have we learned nothing in the last half hour? Up is not an answer. Right, he said, startled. Right, forgive me, I meant up, you know, in the sky. I hid it in the clouds, you see. Alice was beginning to realize that the explanations she'd so desperately sought were now only adding to her confusion. She was no longer certain she wanted to understand furthermore. In any case, she felt another sneeze coming, so she let go of Oliver's hand and grabbed onto his tunic, bracing herself for the impact. But the sneeze was a false alarm, and when it passed, it left her sniffling. She could feel her nose slowly growing numb. The last dregs of the sun's heat had left them, and warmth was in short supply. So, Oliver, she said, still sniffling, tell me, why did you fail?
What?
He said, his body tensing. To free Father, Alice said. Why did you fail to bring him home the first time? What happened? I... Oliver trailed off. Well, I... He seemed to be making a decision right then, a decision that would say quite a lot about the direction of their friendship. Would he trust Alice with his insecurities? Could he dare to be vulnerable in her presence? Which would it be, Truth or omission? Truth or omission? Truth or... I just wasn't good enough. He finally said, Ah, a bit of truth then. Refreshing. I hit a dead end. The final steps stumped me, and I knew I needed help. And you needed my help? Alice asked, flattered and suspicious all at the same time. Oliver stopped walking and locked eyes with her. Yes, he said softly. But you know why, don't you? You can imagine why. Because he's my father? Alice guessed, searching Oliver's face for answers. Because you need to know something about him only I can tell you? Oliver's gaze faltered. He offered her a smile and said, Well, we'll talk more about it later, won't we? For now, he said, perking up as they walked on, we should pay close attention to where we are. Furthermore, is always awaiting our distraction. There's always a trick, always a catch, always a danger smarter or sillier than you think. It's a strange and terrible land to get lost in, he said, and then, more sadly, it's probably why your father couldn't get out. Right, Alice said, startled. Of course. It was another tiny pinch of a reminder, but it was enough. Alice had worried and wondered about Father for 3 years, and now here they were, so close, and still so very, very far. Alice had dreamed of a reunion with Father the way some people dreamt of fame and glory. She'd acted out the motions hundreds of times. She'd imagined every smile, every tear, every clinging hug. And yet, somehow, it was much easier to dream of Father from afar, because being this close to him now only filled her with fear. What if their journey went terribly wrong? What if she ruined everything with a simple mistake and Father stayed gone for good? It would be infinitely more difficult to live with loss if Alice had herself to blame for the lack. She wore her worries like a cloak clasped tight around her throat, but... Come fear or failure, Alice would tread cautiously into the night. There would be no turning back. Alice didn't know where they were going now, but the farther they went, the darker it grew, and the darker it grew, the colder it became, and the colder it became, the quieter it was, and the quieter it was, the more there was to hear. My goodness, Oliver said. Your stomach has quite a roar. Alice felt a blush creep up her neck. It's no fault of mine, she said. I'm not to blame for needing food. And how are you feeling? He asked. He'd come to a complete stop, so she did too. There was nothing but darkness all around them, not a single thing in sight. I'm feeling all right, I think. Her stomach sang another song, and she sighed. I'm feeling a bit faint, really. Are you quite empty, do you think? Alice raised an eyebrow at Oliver. Empty, he said again. How empty are you feeling? Very. Well, I'm thrilled. This is excellent timing. Why, Oliver Newbanks, what a rude thing to say. My hunger is not a thing to be happy about. Hunger is not one but two, he said. Emptiness is not three, but four. He was whispering to the moons, his eyes on the stars, his hands reaching up into the dark, searching for something. What? She asked, eyes wide. What are you doing? But then, there it was. Oliver was tugging on a chain in the sky. He pulled once, very firmly, and it made a scissor-like sound. A light bulb illuminated. It was hanging free and clear, right there, right in front of her, suspended not 10 feet off the ground. She wouldn't have been able to reach for it, not even with a stool, right in the middle of nothing. She was still gaping at the light bulb even when Oliver looked back at her. "Are you ready?" he asked.
"Always,"
she said.
"But whatever for?"
And then he took her by the waist and tossed her in the sky. Alice thought maybe she should scream. It seemed like the right thing to do, but it didn't feel honest. The truth was, she wasn't scared at all, and besides, it was much warmer up here. She'd flown straight up, light as a bulb, and it was only once she'd stopped and stood around that she understood why lighting that first light was so important. It was awfully dark in the clouds. She looked around for Oliver, and it was only a moment before he was standing beside her, both their feet planted firmly in the air. "It's quite nice, isn't it?" he said. Nice wasn't the word Alice was searching for. It was not uncomfortable, no, but it was strange, certainly. The cloud they stood on was fairly insubstantial, and she feared she'd slip through at any moment, but when she mentioned this to Oliver, he only shrugged and said, "As long as you're hungry, I wouldn't worry. It's always best to float on an empty stomach." Oliver was positively beaming. He kept reaching out around them, touching the dewy cotton of the clouds, running his fingers through their tangled strands. Occasionally he was too rough, and he'd rake his hand right through a stubborn knot of cloud, and the whole thing would burst into rainwater. This seemed to delight Oliver in a most particular way, as the water would then pool in the palm of his hand, and he'd proceed to drink up its contents.
"Hey,"
Alice said, and tugged at his shirt.
"I thought you said we weren't allowed to eat anything, and furthermore..."
"This is not eating," Oliver said, licking his fingers. "This is enjoying." Alice was beginning to realize that the longer they stayed in furthermore, the more relaxed Oliver became. It was also true that he was still very nervous and overly cautious, but somehow, despite his many fears, he seemed happier. He was nothing at all like the grumpy boy she'd met so few days ago, and Alice was surprised to find that she was actually learning to like Oliver. Just now she couldn't help but grin at his giddiness. Though she was a bright, interesting young girl, the difficulties of the last 3 years had isolated Alice from persons her own age. Now was her chance to start new and shake off the disappointments of her middle-care years, and she couldn't contain her quiet excitement. After all, Alice was now 12 years old, which meant she was nearly grown up, and if growing up meant she'd be making new friends, well, Alice decided she wouldn't mind getting old. The clouds were pressed up around them now, soft and warm and doughy. The air smelled like apples and baked bread, and Alice had never known she could feel so safe in the sky. She peered down to see how high they'd floated, but could see nothing of the ground. Around them was cloud after cloud, and, oh, she could just lie here, she thought, and it would be so cozy, and she'd have the best sleep of her life, definitely, definitely. Had she mentioned how soft and warm it was in the clouds? She couldn't remember. Anyway, she was so tired, so comfortable, so sleepy, so... "Alice!" Oliver said suddenly. "Alice, no!" He shook her, hard, the panic in his voice sending a chill through her body.
"What is it?"
she gasped, looking around.
"What happened?"
"You cannot sleep without a dream," he said urgently. "Never, ever sleep without a dream." He looked so rattled, she didn't know what to say. "They will always try to keep you here, but you cannot stay. Do you understand?"
"No,"
said Alice, who was still visibly frightened.
"I don't understand at all. Who will try to keep me? Why?"
"You really don't know, do you? You truly know nothing of furthermore?"
"Of course I don't," said Alice, defensive. "I've heard only rumors of furthermore, and most of them nonsense. Aside from that,"
she looked around,
"well, we are standing on a cloud, Oliver. I can't possibly make any sense of this."
Oliver almost smiled. People are so preoccupied with making sense, despite it being the most uninteresting thing to manufacture. He shook his head. "Making magic," he said, "is far more interesting than making sense."
"But we do make magic,"
Alice pointed out.
"It's all we make, isn't it?" We spend our lives harvesting magic.
Yes, said Oliver. We make magic, and what do we do with it? We turn it into currency. We make laws. We build homes. We bake bread. We mend bones. We use magic so carefully you'd think we had none at all.
And do you think we should do things differently in Fernwood?
No, Oliver said quickly. Not exactly, but I do think there's much to be appreciated in the oddness of furthermore.
There's something curious about a land that uses magic in a reckless way. He smiled to himself. I confess I sometimes enjoy the chaos. It provides a great diversion from the safe, sleepy lives we live in Fernwood.
Alice touched a hand to her face, cold against cold, both warming each other from nothing, and kept quiet for a minute. Oliver's opinions had left her troubled and concerned, and she wondered for the very first time whether she hadn't made a very big mistake in coming here.
Alice didn't agree with Oliver, you see. Alice loved her safe, steady village, and for a girl who'd always longed for adventure, she didn't much care for chaos. In fact, Alice had never even thought of using magic haphazardly, without regard for consequences or the well-being of others. That just wasn't the way of Fernwood folk. They were kind and caring people who lived mostly happy, straightforward lives. A lawless sort of magic-making seemed dangerous to Alice. Lawless magic, she realized, would make it easy to hurt someone else. And despite it taking her far too long to discern this, Alice was finally grasping something rather important.
Oliver, she said slowly.
Yes.
Are there people in Furthermore who want to kill us?
Yes, he said. Of course.
Alice felt a pain snatch the air from her lungs.
Why, Alice, Oliver said, surprised. There's a reason why the elders keep Furthermore a secret from Fernwood. This land is like sinking sand. Once you step inside, you're never really meant to leave.
Ever?
She cried.
Never.
But why?
I really would like to tell you, but it would take far too long to explain. Oliver was silenced by a single, threatening look from Alice.
Oh, all right, he said with an air of defeat. We can spare a few, and only a few, moments to talk this through. And I suppose it's best to start from the beginning if you haven't even a hint of the middle.
He looked around for something to lean on and found nothing but sky, so he began pacing the short length of the cloud.
You know the old song, don't you? He said. About Furthermore and Fernwood?
This much Alice knew. So she nodded and promptly recited. Farther is more than Fernwood. Go as far as the land may reach. A quick dip in the sea, and you're up to your knees, then cross the sleeping beach. Time is a hard and heavy rule. You'll find it behind the door. Adventure is there. He's lost all of his hair. Beyond is Furthermore.
It was a nursery rhyme Alice had known forever. A tale of nonsense, she was told, just funny words strung together to trick children into sleep.
It was only now, as Alice repeated the words aloud, that she saw the secrets between the silliness. She grew quiet as she finished the poem, and Oliver nodded, recognizing her silent realization.
Long ago, he said, in the very, very beginning, Furthermore and Fernwood were united, despite being split vertically by sea. It was a land called Anymore.
Things were different back then, Oliver said thoughtfully.
Anymore had opened its borders to the non-magical world.
Alice's eyes went wide. This she'd never known.
Magical folk married non-magical folk, and things were all right for a while, but you know how it is. We can't survive without magic, and non-magical folk didn't understand. Mixed magic made it so some children were born with talent, while others were not, and they couldn't always tell right away. Non-magical parents would want to take their children out of Anymore to go back home, and things seldom ended well. To make matters worse, giving birth to magical babies was very hard on non-magical mothers. Many of them died in childbirth. It was a very dark, very unhappy time.
Oh, Oliver,
Alice said, her hand on her heart.
This is a terrible story.
Oliver nodded. And I hate telling it, so I'll skip ahead.
Do you know the origin of Farron and Further?
Alice shook her head. Oliver was solemn as he said, They were twin sisters. Their birth had killed the mother, and they were raised by a grieving magical father. But the two girls processed their father's grief in different ways. Farron, who'd inherited her father's magic, wanted to prevent this sort of thing from ever happening again by cutting ties with non-magical folk. Further, who'd not inherited any magical ability, wanted to honor her non-magical mother by maintaining those ties. It was the beginning of a revolution for the land. The two became figureheads for a controversy that had been brewing for decades. Wars were waged, sides were taken, any more split in two to become Farronwood and Furthermore, as we know it now. Alice was so stunned she could no longer stand. So she sat down, legs crossed beneath her, and leaned back on a bit of cloud. And then what happened?
They never spoke, not ever again, said Oliver.
Both sides lost so much life and magic during the war that they eventually agreed to agree to only one everlasting law, that they would never meddle in each other's magic matters for as long as their lands still stood.
Wow, said Alice.
Furthermore, has been true to its founder's wishes and deals with all kinds of visitors, magical and non-magical alike. But the twisty business of Furthermore attracts the wrong sorts of visitors. Few come to Furthermore in pursuit of decent pastures.
Oliver frowned.
And it doesn't help that this land has been reckless with their magic. It's a deeply unsteady, turbulent place, and its people have fractured into hundreds of smaller villages, each with its own rules and officials, and each with contradictory laws and confusing legislature. It's a land rife with inconsistencies because the confusion suits their underhanded ways. But they burn through magic faster than the land can produce it, and in their desperation for more, they're willing to do awful things.
What kinds of awful things?
Alice asked. Oliver paused, then said,
Well, we live off the land in Farronwood, don't we? We are made more magical because of the fruits and plants and nuts we eat, are we not?
Alice nodded.
Right, so...
He cleared his throat.
In Furthermore, they eat more than just fruits and plants and nuts.
Alice nearly jumped to her feet.
I knew it, she said. That's why they eat animals, isn't it? Isn't it? Oh, how awful!
I'm afraid it's much worse than that, said Oliver quietly.
What?
Alice stalled.
What do you mean?
Furthermore is very hungry for magic, Alice, and we, that is to say, you and I, are meant to be... He hesitated.
Well, we're meant to be... consumed.
Alice blinked and stared, confused.
Oh, for goodness sake, Oliver said. Consumed, Alice? They want to eat us. They will eat people for their magic. Although they do prefer to eat visitors, he added. Something about it being more compassionate that way. They'll only eat their own in the most desperate situations, and in order to avoid these desperate situations, they've taken proactive measures.
Alice made a squeaking gasp of a sound. Oliver bit his thumb deep in thought.
I suppose, Furthermore, is a lot like a series of increasingly complicated spider webs. Each village has a distinct way of catching its prey, which, well, you know.
He raised an eyebrow.
It makes it so it's very difficult to stay alive here.
How awful, Alice cried.
Oh, I can't imagine, I can't even imagine.
Goodness, she said, holding a hand to her chest.
I can't breathe, can I? I'm sure I can't breathe.
She was wrong, of course. She was entirely able to breathe, but Alice was scared, and so she was, for the moment at least, very short of breath. And it was then, as she struggled to right her breathing and keep from upsetting her stomach, that she decided she hated Furthermore more than she'd ever hated any place in her entire life. She was now fully terrified for Father, and she couldn't imagine what horrors he'd already experienced. Oliver held out a hand to her.
Right, he said. Ready to finish up here? Alice accepted his outstretched hand and, once on her feet, shook out her skirts and looked around at the slumbering darkness. She couldn't trust anything anymore. She was sure this velvety night cloaked infinite secrets.
"Oliver,"
she said quietly.
"Hm?"
He was searching his pockets for something.
"How do you know all this? All this history of Furthermore and Farinwood? I don't remember learning about any of it."
That held his attention.
"No," he said, looking up. "I didn't learn any of it in Farinwood. My friends in Furthermore taught me."
"You have friends in Furthermore?" Alice said, startled.
"But I thought there are good and bad in every bunch, aren't there?" Oliver shrugged and resumed digging through his pockets. "I've seen many hearts here heavy with the loveliest secrets. Not everyone in Furthermore enjoys eating people, you know. But I'm so sorry, Alice, but now we really must be going. We've already used up a great deal of time, and any more than this would be a waste. I promise I'll answer more of your questions when there's time to spare."
"All right,"
she whispered, staring at their clasped hands. But then,
"Can I ask just one more question?"
Oliver sighed and smiled.
"Yes."
"Is Father in very great danger?"
Oliver's smile wavered, and he would not answer immediately. He looked away before he spoke, and when he did, he only said,
"It's so good that you've come, Alice. We've needed you."
"We?"
"Yes," said Oliver. "Your father and I." Shock shook her.
"You've seen him?"
Alice asked, grabbing Oliver's shirt.
"You've seen him?"
She nearly burst into tears.
"Oh, you've seen him. Please tell me you've seen him."
"I," Oliver said, swallowing hard. "That is, I mean, yes, I have."
"How was he? Did he look healthy? Did he say anything to you?"
"Yes," Oliver said.
The stars were so bright behind him, the sky so dark. "He spoke to me, but only once."
"And?"
Alice was impatient now, terrified, horrified, so happy.
"What did he say?"
Oliver looked down. "He told me to find you." Alice stared at Oliver in stunned silence, just until the clouds shook and the moons flickered and the stars swayed in the sky. The air was changing, and Oliver noticed. He was in a hurry to get moving, but she was still numb, somehow, still trying to process everything she couldn't understand.
Father had asked for her.
Oh, it made her very knees tremble. It made her miss him more than ever, more in every moment. But then Oliver pulled a vial out of his pocket, and curiosity pushed her back into the present.
"What's that for?"
she asked. "The sky has something we need," he said, "so we must give it something it wants."
"What could a sky possibly want?"
Alice wrapped her arms about herself and fought back a shiver as she spoke. She was suddenly cold.
"That seems silly."
"Don't be absurd," he said, surprised. "Everything wants something."
And with that, he uncorked the vial and poured its contents upside down. It was too dark for her to see. "It's dirt," Oliver said, answering her silent question. "This stretch of sky," he said, gesturing to the air around them, "will never touch the ground. It's a prisoner, all alone, stuck here forever, always gazing down upon the land, always estranged from all the excitement." Alice had never considered a lonely sky. It was a new thought for her. And she wanted to explore it, but then the wind snapped like a crack of lightning, and Alice and Oliver looked toward the sound. A book hung in the air, big and brown and leather-bound, and Oliver snatched it out of the sky, grabbing Alice's hand in the process. Without a wink or a warning, or a sentence to spare on the matter, she and Oliver were sent crashing down. The weight of the book made them heavy, and though they fell far and hit the ground hard, they were only slightly bruised and out of breath upon landing. Alice opened her eyes to find their limbs tangled together and she hurried to unhook herself from Oliver, drooping sideways as she stood up. It took her a few moments to find her head. Strangest of all, she wasn't dead.
"Why didn't that kill us?" asked Alice, peering up at the sky. "We fell such a long way."
Oliver shrugged, dusting the dirt off his pant legs. Falling down would be a tragically boring way to die, and furthermore, they'd never stand for it.
"Right,"
said Alice, who wondered whether Oliver hadn't gone a bit mad. Once they'd both recovered their footing, they turned their eyes to their prize. A pocketbook, Oliver had said. But this was not that, and Alice told him so.
"What do you mean?" Oliver asked. "Of course this is a pocketbook. What else could it be?"
"A pocketbook is a lady's purse," she said, tapping the book. "And this is not a lady's purse."
"A lady's what?" Oliver asked, frowning.
"See, now, I haven't the faintest idea what nonsense they're teaching to young people these days." Oliver cracked open the cover. "But this," he said, "this is indeed a pocketbook." And so it was. It was a book where every page had a different pocket. Alice reached out, amazed, to touch one of the pockets, and Oliver jerked the book away from her.
"What are you doing?" he asked, horrified.
"I just wanted to—"
"One does not simply reach into a pocket."
"Why not?"
"What do you mean, why not?"
Oliver looked absolutely ashamed of her.
"What kind of manners were you raised with?"
"Hey," she said, stomping one foot. "That's not fair. I have very good manners."
"Oh? And your mother taught you to go digging in other people's pockets, then?"
"No,"
Alice said, going red in the face. Then, more quietly,
"I didn't realize they were other people's pockets."
Oliver's expression softened. "Have you never seen a pocketbook before?" Alice shook her head. Oliver's voice was gentle and sad when he said, "I take it your mother's home teaching lessons were not very thorough?"
"Not thorough at all," she said, staring at her feet. "My apologies, Alice."
And he really did sound sorry, so she looked up. "Pocketbooks are full of other people's pockets," he said simply, "and one must not touch another person's property without permission."
"That seems fair,"
she said. Oliver nodded.
"So how do we get permission?" she asked.
"Well, we have to ask them, of course."
"All of them?"
"Some of them," he said, closing the book carefully.
"Won't you please let me look in the book?" Alice asked. "I promise I won't pick any pockets. I'm only curious."
"I have to return this to a friend of mine," he said, "so let's wait until we're in his presence. Besides, there's very little light here, and it's never safe when the sun comes out." Alice stared at him.
"You never told me that."
"I certainly tried to, didn't I? Anyhow, now that we've got the pocketbook, we can turn our attention to other things. There are still a few items we need for our journey, so we'd better get a move on."
Alice rushed forward so eagerly she nearly tripped over her skirts. She trailed too close to Oliver and kept stepping on his heels. Alice was now rightly afraid of Furthermore and its hidden dangers, and if she had to choose between here or home, she'd choose home every time.
But everything was so interesting here, so different, so suddenly terrifying, that it was somehow addicting.
After all, Alice had known loss and loneliness and bone-deep sadness, but she'd never known anyone who'd wanted to eat her. And a small part of her wondered what that was like, too. The thing was, now that she'd had enough time to process the shock of it all, Alice found herself rather flattered by the idea. Our young friend had been paid very few compliments in her life, and, strange as it was, she was pleased to know that someone thought she'd make a fine meal. That had to mean she was high-quality magic, didn't it? That had to mean she was made of something strong and sustainable, didn't it? Of course it didn't, but then very few grown people have ever made sense of a young person's mind, and I have no great ambitions to count myself among the pioneers. In any case, Alice was now more fascinated by Furthermore than ever before, and she wanted to know everything about life in this strange land. Oliver, however, was reluctant to share.
"But where did you live?"
she asked him, half-jogging in an effort to match his pace.
"Was it nice? Did your mother come to visit?"
Oliver laughed in this strange, incredulous way that twitched his face and pinched his nose.
My mother, he said. Come to visit Alice. Be serious.
But didn't she miss you?
Oliver raised an eyebrow at her. I doubt it. Besides, would you want your mother to visit while you were on a task? Alice blushed.
Well, seeing as I'll never have a task, my answer couldn't really matter, could it?
Oliver stopped, bit the inside of his cheek, and was generous enough to look ashamed of himself.
I'm sorry, he said. I forgot. Yes, I nearly had two.
Do you still have your card? Alice nodded, her fingers reaching for the stiff piece of paper tucked inside her skirt pocket. I still think you should unlock it, he said.
Yes, well, I think we should find Father,
Alice said, and looked away. Oliver opened his mouth to speak, exhaled sharply, and said nothing more on the subject. It was Alice who finally broke the silence.
So what else do we need to get?
Oliver glanced at Alice's bare feet and said, Shoes.
Shoes?
Alice hurried forward, startled to catch up with Oliver, who'd already begun walking again.
But I never wear shoes.
You'll also need to get clearance before we can leave slumber, he said. So we'll need to get you a ruler, of course, as all visitors must carry rulers, and then we'll need to get it filled, but
Alice had frozen still.
Oliver was speaking, but Alice could no longer hear him, and it took him a moment to realize she was no longer following his lead. When he finally looked back, he found Alice planted in place, her eyes wide with wonder.
What is it?
Oliver whipped around in search of danger. He was trying not to worry. But Alice had a bad habit of worrying him. What's the matter?
Why?
She said.
Why what?
Why do I need a ruler?
Because, he said, despite the many inconsistencies, following rules is very important in furthermore.
But...
Now, Alice, Oliver said, frowning, please don't fight me on this. We might be able to compromise on the shoes, but the ruler is very important. A visitor in furthermore must have a ruler at all times.
But why?
Well, Oliver said, because it measures our time spent here. He reached into his bag and procured a simple wooden ruler that looked an awful lot like something Alice had seen before. She took it from him, inspecting it, and was swiftly reminded of Father's ruler. It was the one thing he'd taken with him when he left home. Alice had not forgotten. How could she? Father always took great care of that ruler. He'd kept it wrapped in a thin rectangle of red velvet, tucked away in the top drawer of his dresser, and checked every night to make sure it was still there. The one time Alice had taken it, hoping to engage it in a bit of play, Father had told her very firmly that it wasn't a toy. He'd said it was special. Alice had always wondered how a ruler could be special, but now, holding Oliver's ruler in her hand, she was finally beginning to understand. As she remembered it, Father's ruler was much the same as Oliver's, dark and thin and marked along the edges the way a ruler might be, but the greatest difference between the two was also the strangest. Oliver's ruler was much, much heavier than Father's.
"'Hm,' said Oliver, nodding. "'Yes, it's quite heavy when it's full.'
"'Full of what?'
"'Time, of course. Time is the only thing in this land that's actually regulated,' Oliver explained. "'Furthermore, it's very, very persnickety about time. It's mandatory to fill and measure the length of any visit because Furthermore likes to keep a close eye on all who pass through.'
"'Time,'
Alice said softly, eyes still locked on the ruler in her hand.
How odd.
Yes, they don't like to waste time here. For years, Furthermore let visitors take as much time as they wanted, but so much of it was spent on thinking and wondering and deciding that it's now very strictly regulated. And then, seeing the look on Alice's face, he added, Studies have shown that thinking and wondering lead to thoughtful decision-making. It's an epidemic. Alice's mouth popped open in surprise.
You mean to say that Furthermore doesn't want visitors to make thoughtful decisions?
Of course they don't, Oliver said, tugging the ruler out of her hands. Stupid people are much easier to eat.
I beg your pardon?
If you force visitors to make hasty, hurried decisions, they're bound to make poor choices more quickly, which will more efficiently lead to their demise. but going slowly won't do either. They'll make a nice stew out of you for wasting time. It's a simple trap, he said. You lose either way, so we'll have to settle for being quick and clever.
Alice relinquished the ruler, but reluctantly, distractedly. She was done being shocked by Oliver's explanations, but she was now lost in her own thoughts.
Did you know, said Alice quietly, that Father left Farronwood with nothing but a ruler?
I did.
So he knew, Alice said, confirming her own suspicions. Before he left, Father knew where he was going.
He must have known, said Oliver. He'd been here plenty of times before. He knew how it all worked. In fact, it was because of his notes and knowledge of Furthermore that I'd known what to do when I got here. I owe him a great debt.
This was too much for Alice to process. Why would Father come back to Furthermore after all these years? What did he want here?
Alice had long suspected that Father was different from everyone else in Farronwood. His thoughts were richer, his mind was fuller, his eyes were brighter. But Alice never thought of Father as a man with secrets, and now she was beginning to wonder if she'd really known Father at all. She bit her lip and bundled her thoughts, setting aside her feelings of unease. Loving Father meant loving all of him, his open windows as well as his dusty corners, and she refused to love him less for secrets unknown. Alice had secrets too, didn't she? And she was beginning to realize that part of growing up meant growing tender, and that secrets were sometimes wrapped around tender things to keep them safe.
So, Oliver said as he straightened the hem of his tunic, shall we see about getting you that pair of shoes?
Alice looked down at her feet. Horrifying, I know, but Alice had never much cared for shoes. She had only ever worn shoes in the winter, and when she had, they were linen boots lined with cotton flowers, soft and springy and comfortable. But it wasn't winter, and she couldn't imagine wearing them now.
Do I have to?
She asked Oliver. There's a tremendous hike ahead of us, he said, making an effort to look sympathetic. I do highly recommend it.
Well, said Alice, biting her lip. All right. If wearing shoes will make it easier to find Father, then I suppose it's... Oh!
Alice hesitated, remembering something important. What is it? Oliver said.
I haven't any Finks, she said.
Then more quietly...
Do they even accept Finks here? How do we buy things in Furthermore?
You know, I don't know, Oliver said, smiling. I just ask people to give me things when I want them.
But that's stealing.
For me, it's asking.
Oh, Oliver,
she said, her eyes narrowing. You're awful.
Anyway,
he said, cheering up, I happen to have some currency on my person. Just a moment. Oliver reached into his bag and dug around a bit. He held up a few red coins. They looked a lot like buttons, but imagine them heavier. For just a moment, before snapping them all in half, releasing their magic. One Fink contained only an ounce of magic, but three Finks would be three times as much, and a lot could be done with 3 ounces of magic. Working quickly with his hands, Oliver fashioned his Finks into a simple pair of shoes, which, needless to say, was a complicated task for a 13-year-old. Most people didn't bother making things from scratch anymore. Most people traded in their Finks, red, and Stoppics, blue, and Tintons, green, for ready-made products fashioned together by expert artisans. Alice was impressed.
More impressive still, the shoes themselves. They were simple ballet slippers made of bright blue satin with ribbon laces trailing like glossy tendrils. Oliver could have magicked together any style of shoe for Alice, but he chose the slippers on purpose. They were the dancing shoes she never had, and Alice was deeply flattered by the gesture. In fact, for a girl who didn't care for shoes, Alice was surprised to find that she genuinely liked, almost loved, the slippers, but her pride kept her from telling Oliver the whole truth. So she smiled and thanked him, very politely stating that they were perfectly good, when indeed they were great, and entirely sensible, when in fact they felt luxurious, and Alice had already told so many small lies since arriving in Furthermore that she no longer noticed how easily she slipped into a few more. It had become so easy to fib little fibs and tell little fictions, the truth had become gray, and Alice had no way of knowing that her one protection against Oliver and all other untrustworthy souls had failed long ago. So she happily tied her blue shoes to her feet, danced around on tiptoe in anticipation, and followed Oliver into the dark. Slumber really was quite tediously dark. I say this not only because it's true, but because at this point in the story there is little other scenery to comment on. Alice and Oliver were leaving the city lights of Slumber far behind. From here there was no firelight visible, no floating bulb brightening the sky. It was dark, cold, very quiet. Alice and Oliver had been walking along in companionable silence, each absorbed in their own thoughts. They were heading toward somewhere or other, to a place where Alice would acquire a ruler and other miscellaneous necessities, but neither of the two children seemed, at least in the present moment, much interested in discussing it. Alice was loping along, poking at the dark with one finger and hoping to make a hole in it. She was searching for light, for answers, for Father. Her desperate need for him had led her here, wading through perfect darkness, navigating blindly a world she did not know. Father had left on purpose. Alice knew this now, and somehow that changed everything. Had Father left her on purpose? Or had he left Mother on purpose? What did all of it mean? Why would he leave their home for a land that might consume him? Why take that risk? For what? Alice's head had filled with so many questions she'd run out of the space needed for paying attention, so she didn't notice Oliver, or the sudden spring in his step, or the crooked smile on his face. Alice couldn't have known what Oliver was thinking, so I really shouldn't tell you either. But I think we know each other well enough now to take care of each other's secrets, so I'll tell you this. Oliver was feeling relieved. He told Alice a bold lie not too long ago, and now he was finally sure he'd gotten away with it. Which was the lie, I will not say, but Alice, Oliver had realized, was no longer immune to his charms. Let's not forget this. Alice, oblivious, was still deep in thought, distracted only by her first glimpse of light in the distance, a single pulsing beam that grew larger as they drew closer. Alice tapped Oliver on the arm, and they were both soon alert, Oliver reclaiming his wariness as Alice grew once again curious. She turned to Oliver. "What? It's the border crossing," Oliver said briskly. "Border crossing? I thought I was getting a ruler." Oliver nodded, and Alice could just barely make out his silhouette in the growing light. "Yes, you'll be issued a ruler as soon as you receive clearance," he said. "Slumber is the point of entry for all visitors. The real, furthermore, is still beyond." Alice's eyes and mouth went round at the same time. "And what do I have to do to gain clearance?" Oliver hesitated. "I haven't any absolute idea," he said. "It's different for everyone, but we'll find out soon enough, won't we?" He nodded ahead. The light was growing larger by the moment, and now it was nearly blinding. "Just a bit farther." Alice pressed forward, shielding her eyes against the glare. It was nearly impossible to see anything anymore. The brightness was almost painful. In fact, Alice was just in the middle of thinking she didn't know how much more of this she could stand when suddenly the light went dim. It took Alice several tries to get her eyes to focus. She blinked and blinked until the multiple halos disappeared, and she could finally be certain of what she was looking at. There was a single white door planted upright into the ground. In the center of it was a very large doorbell. Above the doorbell were hammered gold letters that read, "Press here for adventure." Alice looked to Oliver for reassurance, and he nodded. Carefully, very carefully, Alice reached one finger forward and pressed the button. It beeped softly like it might have been sleeping. A moment later the door disappeared, instantly replaced by a person and a desk, one behind the other. The person was wearing several shirts in varying shades of piglet pink, and Alice couldn't tell if the person was in fact a person, or perhaps a thing, but she didn't have time to deliberate before it spoke. "Name?" said all the pink. It turned out that it was indeed a person, the kind who wore a powder blue top hat. Alice startled and hurried forward. she noticed a nameplate on the desk that read, Ted Adventure, Border Control, Village of Slumber.
Name?
Ted demanded again. Alice Alexis Queensmeadow, said Alice quickly. She tried to smile.
Business?
Business, Alice repeated nervously. She glanced at Oliver. I'm here to look for my
fruit tree, Oliver finished for her, jumping forward and flashing a smile at Ted.
She lost her fruit tree in the town of Slender, and she's desperate to get it back. Raised it from a seedling, you know.
Ted blinked at Oliver several times, wordlessly shuffling paperwork around.
Seedling? He finally mumbled. Yes, of course I've got that here.
I'm sure you'll find all her documents are in order, Oliver added with another smile. Ted nodded again, his head heavy with Oliver's persuasion.
So if you would be so kind as to issue her the proper ruler and fill it with, oh, I'd say 6 months' worth of time, we'll be on our way.
Oliver slid his own ruler across the desk.
I'll take a refill on mine, too, thank you. Same as last time, we'll be just fine.
Same as last time, said Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Ted got to work, quickly stamping papers and rifling through desk drawers, and Alice was, for the very first time, amazed by Oliver's ability. She thought she knew what he was capable of, but she'd never really seen him in action. Not like this. This was truly extraordinary, she thought. And while a part of her felt guilty for tricking her way through furthermore, another part of her realized that that was just the way things were. It was, as Oliver had said, a land of tricks and puzzles, and Alice and Oliver had to play along if they were ever going to make it through.
"Your ruler,"
Ted said suddenly. Alice felt a flutter in her stomach as she stepped forward. The ruler Ted pushed across his desk was different from Oliver's. Hers was a bleached wood, a bit shorter, but sturdier, and looked as though it had been salvaged from a garbage bin. It was riddled with nicks and scratches, clearly used to death, but Alice didn't mind. Her ruler felt worn and well-loved and easy to hold. It was solid, heavy, full of time. She flipped it over to find a brief inscription carved into the wood. Alice Alexis Queensmeadow, snap in three in case of emergency.
In case of emergency? She said, looking up at Ted. What does that mean?
Ted stared.
Excuse me, she tried again. What does...
Your time is up when the wood loses its weight, Ted said, not appearing to have heard her. So be sure to get back here before then.
All right, said Alice. But what happens if I don't get back here before then?
Ted blinked.
You'll be arrested for stealing.
What?
Alice gasped. Ted blinked again.
I will now ask you a series of routine questions.
But...
Alice swallowed hard.
Okay.
Are you a visitor traveling with a disability or a medical condition?
Ted was reading from a sheaf of paper at which he now squinted. He shifted closer to his desk lamp.
I don't...
Are you traveling with any special items?
Ted asked. He was making small notes on the page as she answered.
No,
Alice said.
I mean, I don't think...
Are you a visitor aged 75 or older?
At this, Alice frowned.
Obviously not. I've only just turned 12.
Ted pushed a button on his desk, and a shock of confetti exploded over his head and onto the brim of his top hat. Alice now understood why he wore it.
Congratulations, he said. Are you traveling with any food or gifts?
At this, Ted looked her square in the eye, and Alice could see a flicker of his stubborn mind breaking free of Oliver's hold.
No,
she said, shooting a worried glance at Oliver.
No food or gifts.
Oliver squeezed her hand, and a moment later Ted's eyes had glazed over again. He asked her no more questions.
Don't forget to take your visitor pamphlets, Ted said,
shoving some glossy documents across the desk.
And remember to review the permitted and prohibited items list as we've recently updated the...
All right, sure,
Alice said quickly, pocketing the pamphlets without looking at them.
But what about earlier when you said something about being arrested? What did you mean by that?
Ted had just opened his mouth to answer when Oliver began tugging her away.
"Thanks so much. See you soon,"
he called to Ted, and quickly tucked his own ruler back inside his bag.
"Best not to talk too much to Ted right now,"
Oliver whispered. "The more he tries to think, the more easily he'll be able to push through my persuasion, and we can't risk that."
"Okay,"
Alice whispered back, absently shoving the ruler in her skirt pocket.
"But, Oliver, what did he mean I'd get arrested?"
"I'll tell you more about that soon, I promise," he said. "But right now we have to hurry because the sun is about to wake. We need to head straight to the village of Still, and it's going to be rather tricky."
"Trickier than all this?"
she asked.
"Much."
"How much?"
"Very."
She stared at him. He stared at her. They stared ahead. The sky, you see, was ripping itself in half.
"Run!"
Oliver shouted, and Alice knew better than to ask why. The sky was actually ripping apart, right in front of them, and though she hadn't the slightest idea why it was happening, she knew the answer couldn't have been good. But strangest of all wasn't why they were running in the face of danger. It was why they were running directly toward it. There were so many questions Alice wanted to ask, but she was doing her best to keep up with Oliver's long legs, and she was already out of breath.
"Oliver," she said, panting, "why is the sky ripping apart? What's happening?"
"What do you mean?" Oliver asked. "The day is over. Today is getting dressed for tomorrow."
"That," she said, breathing hard, "is one of the silliest things you've ever said to me."
"Why is that so strange?" he asked. He was breathing hard, too.
"Don't you change your clothes every day?"
"Well, yes," she said,
"but I'm a person."
"Oh?" Oliver shot her a look. "And people are the only ones allowed to care about their appearance?" Oliver clenched his teeth as they ran the next 100 feet, breathing harder than before. He was almost entirely out of breath when he said, "Alice, if you plan on surviving and furthermore, you really must change the way you think." He was gasping now. "Narrow-mindedness will only get you as far as nowhere, and once you're there, you're lost forever."
"You think I'm narrow-minded?"
she asked him, clasping a hand to her chest, her heart hammering with each running step.
"Me?"
Oliver never answered her, though probably because he could no longer breathe. He was wheezing more and more every second, and so was Alice, but Oliver was carrying the pocketbook, which looked very heavy. She was sure his struggle was greater than hers, but even though they were running as fast as they could, it seemed impossible to reach the horizon. Alice wasn't sure what Oliver was trying to do.
"When I tell you to jump," he said, still gasping for air, "we must jump."
He glanced at her.
"Okay?"
"Yes,"
she said, trying to catch her breath.
"Yes, okay."
The sky was straight ahead, midnight curtains pulling apart as slivers of gold and silky blue peeked out from underneath. It was an infant sky, innocent as a day unknown.
"Jump!" Oliver shouted. "Jump, Alice, jump!"
Jump she did. The wind caught them in an instant, wrapping around their limbs and hushing their gasping, rasping breaths. And when the moment was right, as it seldom was, they were tossed into the center of a changing sky. Down they fell, from slumber to still. Two thumps later, in Still, they sat. Alice and Oliver were sitting on their bottoms, legs outstretched in front of them. The wind was gone from their lungs, and aches stirred awake in their joints, and Alice had so much to be concerned about, but no time to be concerned. Still had stopped the clock. Winter snow and autumn leaves and spring showers had frozen in place. Raindrops shimmered, suspended like the air wore earrings, and thousands at a time. Snowflakes stuck to the sky like glitter to glue. Autumn leaves had fallen, but never to the ground, and they fluttered in the gentle wind. Ornaments hung on a holiday breeze, brown and orange and red and yellow, caught in a moment that could not be forgot. Alice looked up and around in awe, parted lips and clear eyes, and leaned back on her hands to take it all in. It was quiet as a feather, and so calm, it was tender. The sky was a smoky lavender, and the sun was a yellow cloud, puffing along in the distance, lending an eerie golden glow to everything it touched. Homes were made of colorful squares and triangle roofs. Gray sidewalks curved down streets made of the blackest stone. Birds sat on stoops and did not sing.